It's The Takeaway. I'm Tanzina Vega, and we're so glad to be with you today from the studios of WAMU here in Washington, D.C. Yes, we are sitting here in the eye of the storm. The question on the table here in the Capitol: is the system of checks and balances that's written into the United States Constitution working?
There can be no higher stakes than this attempt to arrogate all power to the executive branch away from the from Congress, and more important, away from the American people. We've talked for a long time about approaching a constitutional crisis. We are now in it. We are now in a constitutional crisis.
House Judiciary Committee Chairman Gerald Nadler, speaking to the press on Wednesday after the committee voted to hold Attorney General William Barr in contempt for defying a subpoena for the unredacted Mueller report. Members of the GOP took a defiant stance against the push for contempt. Here's Republican Doug Collins, ranking member of the House Judiciary Committee, speaking on Wednesday.
Here we are, wasting another valuable week of legislating calendar against the majority's war against the administration.
Just hours before the House panel vote, President Trump exerted executive privilege over the full Mueller report to keep it and its underlying evidence from Congress and the American public. Meanwhile, this week, Treasury Secretary Steven Mnuchin refused a request by Congress for President Trump's tax returns, citing a lack of legitimate legislative purpose. These latest rebukes of congressional oversight by the president again force the question if the president can categorically deny all congressional requests for information or witnesses. Is the system of checks and balances that's written into the United States Constitution even working? We'll dig into some of these big questions with two experts now. I have Victoria Nurse, is a professor of law at Georgetown Law Center, and she's with me here in the studio. Welcome, Victoria.
Thanks for having me.
Keith Whittington is a professor of politics at Princeton University, and we have him. Keith, thanks for joining us.
Thanks.
So, Keith, let's get right to it. How concerned should Americans be about this crisis in our government?
I don't think we should be overly concerned yet. We're still in the early stages of the negotiation between the White House and Congress over just what kind of documents will be provided and what kinds of testimony will be provided. So the rhetoric is ramped up very quickly, but I think we have ways to go.
Victoria, what do you think? Is the system of oversight working?
Well, I think this president has certainly pushed back harder than other presidents on claiming executive privilege. At least the pattern is pretty clear that he is inviting a crisis in the sense of this will have to be resolved in the courts. So I agree that we're not yet at a crisis, but we have to see what's going to go on in the courts and whether the president will actually accede to a court order, because some of his legal arguments here, frankly, are not very good.
And Victoria, we've seen officials who've been held in contempt for refusing to comply with congressional subpoenas in the past under other administrations. Is this current standoff any different?
The difference in this standoff, this happens every day in Washington, up and down, as Professor Whittington noted, that it's negotiated between the White House and Congress every day for requests. But it rarely goes to court. And then the problem is that it often can take a lot of time. The problem here is that the president is inviting the courts to resolve this dispute in many different places simultaneously. And that's what I see as different between now and Nixon and perhaps earlier.
Keith, let's talk about this assertion of executive privilege. Let's remind us what exactly it means and how it's been used in the past.
So presidents claim executive privilege over documents that they hold, and sometimes over witness testimony about conversations that have occurred within the executive branch. Over the course of American history, presidents have claimed fairly broad swaths of things being under executive privilege and say they shouldn't have to share them with either Congress or the courts. That's often been whittled down in practice as Congress has pushed back and gotten hold of some of those documents presidents don't want to share. And sometimes in court cases where the courts have not been persuaded that these kinds of claims should be as expansive as the administration wants them to be.
And Keith, what is different in President Trump's use of executive privilege here, if anything?
I think part of what's different about Trump is just how sweeping the claims of resistance are. The administration has been particularly bold in saying they don't want to cooperate with any kind of investigations going on in Congress, and as a consequence have tried to throw a blanket of executive privilege over extraordinary numbers of documents, a wide range of witnesses, including people who are outside the government and the executive branch. And that's very unusual for presidents to be that aggressive in staking out this kind of claim. They're also unusual, I think, in just how vague some of the claims of executive privilege are. So these kinds of claims about, for example, in the context of the Mueller report, that the entire report is under executive privilege, all possible documents associated with the report are part of executive privilege. At some point, they're going to have to be much more specific about the very specific kinds of documents, very specific kinds of facts that they want to keep out of public eye.
And Victoria, this is not, as we know, the first time the Trump administration has rebuffed oversight. Are there certain actions by the administration that have stood out to you that have led up to this moment?
Well, the Mueller report is an ongoing story. It seems to be the story that never goes away. But, you know, if I were to bet in terms of where we're going to go, we're going to see the tax case, which is a very strong claim on behalf of the Congress and a very weak claim on behalf of the president, go forward faster than the Mueller report. I agree that the boldness of some of these claims is stunning because, as I said, a number of these arguments are legally quite weak. So it's surprising to see a president raise them. The general wisdom in this town is that Presidents Clinton, George W. Bush, George H.W. Bush, Obama wanted to avoid these clashes because of the public perception, not the law, the public perception. And that rule has been changed. This administration is not following that unwritten rule.
And what are the implications of that? I'd love to ask both you and Keith, what are the implications that the public perception of this is changing?
Well, I think what we're going to have a civics lesson here. It may be that the president is making a political calculation that his base wants him to stand strong against the Congress, that this is a deeply political calculation, has nothing to do with the law, and that his base really does not care about these claims. But we will see this ending up, and I don't think people should be disabused of this. This will go to court in some way, shape, or fashion. The president himself has already preempted aggressively the claim in the tax case. So I think this is chapter one of a book about the crisis. It's not the end of the book on the crisis.
Keith, your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I think in our current polarized environment, there's a lot of political incentives to dig in, stake out very extreme positions, and refuse to cooperate as much as possible. We also seem to be an environment in which there's not that much interest in trying to cooperate generally. So the president and Congress don't have a big legislative agenda that they actually want to make progress on. And as a consequence, they can afford to spend their time and resources on these kinds of fights rather than trying to think about how can we get past this particular disagreement in order to focus on the things we have bigger agreements about. I think ultimately the administration is also risking that they're going to lose in court and lose across a range of these kinds of legal battles. And as a consequence, courts are going to wind up defining executive privilege more narrowly than future administrations would like to see. And so there's a really risky strategy to push these legal arguments to their absolute maximum and then try to carry them as far as you possibly can.
I'm speaking with Victoria Nurse and Keith Whittington about their views on the clash between the President of the United States and the Congress. Victoria, let's turn to the Constitution itself, because we hear this constitutional crisis term bandied around. We hear a lot about what the Constitution says, but does the Constitution provide any guidance when it comes to Congress's power to investigate the executive branch?
The Constitution provides Congress with all legislative power, but beyond that, it does not say anything about congressional investigations. Of course, we've had them since George Washington and a defeat of General Arthur St. Clair. So we've had them for a very long time, and we've had some very prominent ones. Teapot Dome was a scandal involving bribery, and then we've had Watergate. But Congress investigates every day because that's the way that they can oversee how the administration, quote unquote, must faithfully execute the law. That's a somewhat misquote of the Constitution. So Congress hands over a lot of power to execute the law to the executive, and this is the only way they can check up on whether the executive is doing a good job. So in 1927, a very famous case, the Supreme Court said the Congress has broad, far-reaching, sweeping powers of investigation. And even in the McCarthy era, when the court shed some doubt on that extent of how far a committee could treat an individual, they still reaffirmed this far-reaching power because it's an incident to legislation. They cannot exercise either the power of oversight or the power to legislate if they don't know the facts.
Keith, if the executive branch is determined to continue this standoff, to stymie House Democrats in particular, what happens if we end up in a deadlock? What happens next?
Well, at some point, courts will weigh in on this. We increasingly have a situation where Congress wants to take these issues to the courts for further resolution when there are these disagreements over the scope of executive privilege, for example. And so courts are going to get dragged into this. They're going to wind up making some rulings. But in addition, Congress has lots of tools of its own to push back on the administration and make life more difficult for the administration if the administration isn't cooperative. And I presume that Congress will eventually want to make use of some of those tools itself in order to try to put more political pressure on the administration to concede to some of the House demands.
So, Victoria, we heard Representative Jerry Nadler say we're in a constitutional crisis, but you're saying we're not there yet.
Well, we're at the beginning of a story that could lead to one, and it will only be one, in my view, if a court were to order the president to do something like they ordered Nixon to reveal the tapes. And the president declined. That would be a case where the only resolution would be impeachment, which may be why Nancy Pelosi is saying all of these current actions by the president are actually goading them toward impeachment.
Well, and the Democrats keep saying that it's on the table, all options are on the table, but there's a little bit of playing coy with that idea.
Well, because they have a legislative agenda and they can't get to it. A cynic might say, well, the president's just doing this to further his presidential ambitions for 2020 and get Congress off its message.
Victoria Nurse is a professor of law at Georgetown Law Center, and Keith Whittington is a professor of politics at Princeton University. Thanks to you both for joining us.
Thank you.
Thank you.